Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy. I host the show, and tonight I have another great guest. She's an author. I read her book. It's actually quite good. I'm going to have some questions, but I'm going to let her explain a little bit about herself first. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, let's do this, because I want to make sure that I get your name absolutely right. I want you to say it first.
Eliza Mata Dalian.
Okay. And you'd prefer to be called Mata, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, Mata, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and kind of what led you to write the book that you wrote?
Of course. Well, I always have a difficulty with the question about talking about myself, because whatever I can say about myself is basically would be the story and would be what I would do, what I do.
Okay.
Normally, it's impossible to talk about our true self, so I would just, I can talk about what I do.
Okay.
And answer your question, what led me to write the book.
Right.
Basically, I've been a seeker for many lifetimes, and this lifetime I was fortunate enough to be on a journey since I was 24. And as a result of meeting being in touch with, being presented with the work of George Gurdjieff and Osho, the two very important mystics of our times, and starting to do the work practically through meditation and through introspection, because the only way to find the truth would be to look inside. It's impossible to find it through reading, listening to someone else, or just contemplating about the truth. So the whole journey sort of led me to have the experience of recognizing or being face to face with the experience of what is it that we call oneness, what is it that we call cosmic consciousness, what is it that we call universal being. So with that experience, it's like your whole perspective on life changes. And you start to recognize what is an illusion and what is the true reality. So the book is an outcome of this realization of the journey of how we move through stages of development, because there are stages that we all have to go through. Just like any plant, we put a seed in the soil, and it takes time to go through several phases before the potential, which is the flower in the seed, will come to its flowering. And our journey is not different. We're just the same way. In a way, the shell that is needed for, which holds the potential flower within it, is the same shell as what we call the ego mind. And that ego mind goes through certain phases of development. I've divided it into 7 stages in the book, which is absolutely necessary to develop naturally, because our consciousness also develops simultaneously with the development of the ego. So if we reject one part, if we reject the ego, then we're also stopping the consciousness from developing in that particular phase. So the book outlines those 7 stages, which then it's easy to, it's sort of like a spiritual map that you can look at, reflect back to where you are, and have a goal or an orientation to where you're headed. Because I find through my healing work, which was also a development of the process of my own journey, as I started discovering what were the gifts that I have brought here to share, I recognized that, in a way, we're all looking for the same thing, consciously or unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is many times when we don't have a clear direction, and many people don't, because we haven't been really, that part of education has been missing, especially in the Western world, then that's why we end up having the I would call it an epidemic of depression, because there's so many people that have been depressed simply because there's no clear path that they can see where they're headed. And part of our pain and the part of the journey going through suffering and healing is the part of going through those phases that we have to go through. So having something like a destination that is a little bit more clear, I think it makes the journey a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. So this book is the intent of the book is to provide that. To make it easier.
And let's give them the name of the book so they know what we're talking about.
Yes, of course. it's called In Search of the Miraculous, Healing into Consciousness. The part In Search of the Miraculous, it's in a way, it's a very, it's not a new title. That part, there's a title by Peter Uspensky called In Search of the Miraculous where he talks about George Gurdjieff's teachings. And there's another book called In Search of the Miraculous by Osho, where he also talks about the journey. So this one is sort of like in reverence to those two great mystics that have helped me on my journey.
Mm-hmm.
And healing into consciousness is the way I see the journey, because it's a process of healing. I guess having a perspective of being a healer who has developed her own method, which we can talk about maybe later.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the way I see the journey, it's a process of healing, because somewhere we have not been able to grow naturally. We haven't been able to develop naturally. And therefore, the need for healing. Otherwise, we won't need any healing. But that process is what brings us to our individuality and ultimately to understanding of the ego, the mind, the emotions, to the point of disidentifying from them and transforming the ego into consciousness. So it's that's why the subtitle, Healing into Consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Now, the method that you use, which is your own method, let's talk about that now so that people can understand, and then I'm going to ask you some questions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the method that you personally came up with, How did that start?
It started by quite an accident, actually. My background, my training is in education and in architecture. So I never thought I would be a healer, you know, and I never thought that I would be developing a method, a healing method. But the way it came about is that through the personal work that I was doing, I came to realign or remember an ability I had as a child, which was to read thought forms in energies. So, came a time where I decided to leave the work that I was doing at the time, which was in social services, because I felt very frustrated with not being able to really help people seriously. It was seemed like a very band-aid situation. So I sort of naturally fell into looking at how can the healing process of healing be more practically used for helping people. So in combination with the ability, I started working with people, and gradually, over several years, the method slowly crystallized itself into a very mathematical way of very quickly releasing the blockages, which are the suppressed thoughts and emotions, from the entire body. And as a result, what would happen is a complete 180-degree turn in the energy and in consciousness, and to in a way that the healing would be final, and it will not be it won't be that you have to come back to working with the same issue over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So when something goes into the unconscious, the healing method basically works with the unconscious, very directly identifying what are the issues, what is the cause of whatever the problem is. Looking at what are the thought forms and belief systems associated with that cause. And going into the body and working with releasing those programs from the cells, because everything is imprinted in the body. Mm-hmm. And we normally do sort of intellectually a certain amount of work, which is a good preparation to help us understand that the next step would be to go into the body. And I would say 99.9% people that come to see me have already gone through phases of doing whatever they can, and they still feel stuck. And that's where, but they have a certain preparation through doing the work that they understand now the issues are in the tissues. So they understand that, okay, this is what we need to do. We need to work with going into the body and into the unconsciousness. And my method does that very instantaneously.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, want to hold on to things for whatever reason. Is mm-hmm. that not true?
Absolutely.
Okay. Do you think it's because that they are afraid to let go of what they know because they don't know what to expect after that? Or do you think that they really don't know how to let go, so they just stay, no matter how uncomfortable it is, in that comfort zone for themselves?
Both are true.
So if somebody comes to you, now, first of all, do they have to come in person, or can they? Do you do it by phone? How do you do it?
I do it both ways. I do it in person as well as on the phone. The process would be slightly different, of course, because in person I would work on somebody's body directly, but over the phone I would still work on the body because I could still read thought forms even over the phone.
If somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
They can check my website. It's www.madadalian.com, madadalian.com. I have a lot of information about the healing method. I also have self-awareness intensive courses throughout the year, which is a very helpful tool as well, where people can use the tools available, such as meditations and active meditations. And starting January 27th, I will be doing a free telesatsang, which people can also sign up.
And do they sign up on your webpage for that?
Yes. If they go to schedule of events page, there'll be all the events, and I usually I've started traveling, so I'll be at different locations as well. I'll be in San Francisco area, Seattle, LA, Portland around May. So there's different dates there, and at the yoga show in Toronto. So and the free telesatsang, there's a form that they can sign up and send the form if they're interested. And this is basically to provide a forum where people can ask questions and create sort of like an energy field that could be supportive on the journey.
Okay. If somebody comes to you in person, how long is your session?
The sessions are in person. Well, I have three different types of sessions. They're 30 minutes, 60 minutes, and 90 minutes, depending on what people feel they need or they can afford. The 30-minute sessions, I ask them to bring me the list of all the problems they have, and I would look into the energy. I will identify what the cause of the problems are, and I will give them tools to work on their own. With the 60-minute sessions, I would do that part, plus I would actually work with their energy. And in the 90-minute session, I usually get people to lay down on the table, and I work hands-on.
Okay. Hands-on has got to be pretty powerful, I would think.
It is very powerful, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then if you're doing it by phone, you can't do hands-on, but are the sessions the same length of time?
By phone, I only do 60 minutes.
Okay. And they have to call and make appointments. You can't just call and say, hey, I'd like to talk, right?
There is a form on my website, which is on the website. It's called DHM, Dalian Healing Method. There's a little purple logo. If they click on that, they'll get to a page with lots of information, and there is a button that says book a session. They can fill out the form right on the website and leave their comments to what they would like to work on, and I'll get back to them once I receive their form.
Okay, great. Now, and I have to ask you this, because your psychic ability started when you were a child.
Mm-hmm.
Correct, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you've been a seeker for, you know, many, many lifetimes, but in this lifetime, as a child, when your psychic ability was developing, did you let people know about it? Did you have a hard time with it? You know, how did it work for you when you were a child?
I had a very hard time with it. Because nobody really, I didn't feel that I could communicate that with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the hard part, that you sort of almost starting to think that maybe there's something wrong with me, because, you know. and then obviously when you feel that as a child, you have to suppress that, so you don't want anybody to know. But that you can see things or you can hear things. And I'm sure that might, you know, the same thing is your experience as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me actually a long time to realize that, wait a minute, this is actually a gift that I can use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as a child, when you don't have that support and understanding from adults, and you try to, or you start thinking that there's something wrong with me, so you obviously don't want to look at it, you want to suppress it. Nevertheless, it's always there. It's
right.
In the background, because it's an ability you continually feel and see.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately, I did the work I did on myself in terms of searching and seeking to find my own truth, and once... that's the process which I was trying to describe in the book, that in that process, the healing process makes you more, it brings you more closer to yourself and to your own inner strength. And this is the wounds that start healing, the wounds of insecurity, the wounds of not trusting yourself, not believing in yourself. These are all the wounds connected with what I call the wounded ego. And we absolutely need to go through healing those so that we can come to a place of feeling completely self-sufficient and in appreciation and understanding of who we are, our gifts. And as a result of feeling the ground under our feet is how we can start taking responsibility for ourselves and then take that on to helping other people to do the same thing. And you know, every one of us has a gift, and we can only share what we have learned on ourselves on our journey. So that's the whole process of our human evolution, that we help each other. We help ourselves, we evolve, but then we also, you know, help each other, and that's how we evolve as a humanity. So everyone contributes a very important piece, in my view.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you 100%. The other thing is, because if you looked at my website, it talks about my 501c3 called the Child's Miracle Mind,
mm-hmm.
to help the children today who have been labeled with ADD, ADHD, because I have a hard time with the drugs being passed out like they're candy to these children.
Yes.
And, you know, and my thought has been, as long as I've been doing it and watching my granddaughter grow, is how it all developed, is that these children especially are very, very psychic children, very, very intuitive, you know, and they have a lot going on in their little minds on a constant basis. So it makes them appear like they are not focusing, but in reality they really are. It's just at a different, higher frequency than what we even know.
That's very true, and I'm glad you mentioned children, because that's one of my passions. And I'm sure you feel the same thing, because as a child, when you haven't been supported, you want to support children who are coming with that ability.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, and I feel they're so conscious already.
Mm-hmm.
And all we have to do is start reversing sort of almost like the roles in a way that adults can start listening to children, because they have so much wisdom and they're already in their innocence. What we're doing as adults is trying to peel the onion, the layers of the onion that we've accumulated as we were growing, so we could come back and find our innocence again.
Mm-hmm.
And these children are so there, they're so together. And you're absolutely right. I have a niece, actually I always tell this story whenever this conversation about children comes up. She's very, well, they label her as hyperactive,
mm-hmm.
but she's very creative and
right.
very smart. And I taught her a little meditation, an active meditation to do. And as she started doing it, and I spoke with her several weeks later, because she lives in California, so I was visiting.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so how's your meditations going? And she was... She said, I discovered a part of me that is always peaceful.
That's
and
good.
I didn't know that it existed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the children are so quick to get there.
Mm-hmm.
As adults, we spend years and years and years meditating, trying to get to that place of recognition that there is something that is actually, there is a part of me that is always peaceful. So imagine if, you know, children were able to be led to see that this is actually the truth, and you can come back to it whenever you need.
Mm-hmm.
And this was her words. She said, "Now I know I could come back to it whenever I need."
Right. See, it's very important. See, and a part of my child's miracle mind is a school I want to open, and the school is called the School of Now, which is a school that would never be outdated. Because they're always going to be learning new techniques, new specialist things every single month. And it's a school that is actually designed to help these children truly be who they are, not have to squish what they're feeling or what they think they're hearing or any of their psychic ability. It's to enhance it. And, you know, so I'm trying to put it together because it's really a very different step with the systems that are in, you know, that are we're all using now that are very old and, to my opinion, antiquated for these young kids.
And absolutely, so, and it's such an important work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd love to talk to you about it further because I'm starting to actually do workshops for kids.
Good. That was going to be one of my questions.
Yeah.
See, great minds think alike, you
That's
know.
Right. It's so necessary. So, like I said earlier, I'm so passionate about this work for kids. That because they're the future.
Yeah, they are. You know, they are.
And who else can help them? You know, adults have to help them. This is where the role of an adult is to guide children. But when the adults themselves are, you know, need guidance and they're lost,
mm-hmm.
Obviously, then what are we passing on?
Right, which is, again, the same old, tired energy that really has to be changed. And it's being changed. It's just getting, I think, the adults to accept that the change is here and it's going to continue, whether they like it or whether they don't.
That's right. That's right. And also schools to get involved, to starting to make introspect and meditation part of their curriculum.
See, that will be part of mine. I have a lot of things that I want to incorporate in it, you know, and... Again, we'll talk about it when we're not on, you know, not on the radio, but, and not because I'm ashamed of it, it's just that I want to talk more about you, but we will talk about it because I'm going to have special instructors come in once a month, and I was going to see if you'd like to be one of them that comes in once I get the school up and running.
Absolutely.
Good. The other thing, let's talk a little bit more about what you do, okay? Because I read your book, and it's actually a very good book. You know, it's easy to read. It's easy to understand. You give very good guidance in there, and you give, you know, really good different forms of meditation, and you point out many, many things to people. But one of the things, like, because when I have my counseling sessions, one of the biggest things I always come up with is that people have this horrible, horrible time of letting go of their past hurts, pains, angers, and guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And your book goes into and helps it to be broken down so they can, you know, understand it a little bit easier. But when you're working with somebody and you see that they have this very deep-seated, you know, hurt, pain, anger, or guilt, do you pick up on it, like, right away, which I'm sure you do? And when you do, how's the first step? What's the first step that you do to try to get that person to, you know, start letting go of that?
Well, the first step would be acceptance and non-judgmental acceptance. And this is where most people are stuck, because they're having a hard time to accept themselves without judgment. And this is another part of our outdated social structure, that we're so used to judging. And this is so because we're trained to follow a certain belief system. Religions have a lot to do with this as well. If we're following a certain religious belief system that condemns one thing and approves another, so it already keeps us divided. And as a result of that division, it's very, very difficult for people to start accepting themselves as they are. And the first step would be fully accept your anger, fully accept your sadness, fully accept whatever is happening inside. Because only through acceptance is how we can see the causes of why we're feeling the way we're feeling. Mm-hmm. And unless we see those causes of what is making me feel angry, why am I feeling angry? Why am I reacting to something? Or why am I afraid? The moment the person sees it, it's such a magical transformation. It's instantaneous. So the first thing would be accepting whatever's going on without judgment. And then going into starting to freely, give yourself permission to freely express whatever you're feeling. And this is another thing we're very ashamed or afraid to do, to really expose ourselves and expose what we truly feel or think. And as a result, the whole, you know, life becomes so difficult because we're not authentic anymore. Mm-hmm. And if we can start accepting, if each person starts accepting themselves as they are, they would naturally start accepting others instead of trying to put each other down, compete, try to find faults with each other. So, because we're all in this together on a journey of transformation. Our journeys are very similar. We're not different. We all go through similar feelings, through similar emotions. And life will become so much more joyful that if we can accept it, if we can learn through it, if we can recognize that, okay, we're all in this together, we're all learning in the same way, so I might as well not stop judging myself, so I could stop judging others. And then maybe we can start celebrating and opening to the unknown, because we can actually live with the consciousness, the cosmic consciousness, that we are a cosmic being living on this planet. And be open to receiving, maybe we can have some friends come and visit us, or we can go visit other friends. Yeah, and the whole cosmos belongs to us.
That's very true. Now, the other thing is, when you're working with somebody, do you ever have people who are, like, relatives or friends or anybody who's already crossed over be part of it? Do they come in to help assist?
It happens very often. And it's not always that they come to assist. It's more, through my experience when I'm working, is they're assisting by helping the living to complete what has not been completed.
Okay.
So in other words, if, you know, a father has passed away or a mother has passed away, and there's been any kind of unresolved feelings between the parents and the child, those feelings remain within the child because the child is living. And the parents who've passed over, there's a different perspective already. And that's how they want to help. They stick around till that person can actually resolve those issues so that they're both freed to move on.
And I think it's pretty important for people to understand, because a lot of times, like you're saying, when a relative, you know, crosses over, it does leave somebody who's still here with a lot of hurt or a lot of guilt or even a lot of anger, mm-hmm. you know, and they come up with that feeling of being, you know, left, abandoned. And those are all really hard feelings for somebody to try to get over, let's say. And a lot of times what they do is they just hold them, you know, they just hold them because, again, they don't want to let go for whatever reason. So it's pretty important that they find a way to do that.
That's right. And I can, I'm just, suddenly, you know, an example came to my mind. There was a woman, 35 years old, that came to see me. This was some years ago. And she had, suddenly there was a lower back pain that she suddenly just cramped, her back cramped. Mm-hmm. And she went and she did everything possible with chiropractic and acupuncture, and she went to see her doctor, and the pain wouldn't go away. And she couldn't bend. So she came to see me, and when I started working with her, what I saw was that her father had died when she was 7. And she was holding on to the father. And the father finally, and he was sticking around, you know, till she's older, and finally he had to resort to a very drastic method to freeze her back. Mm-hmm. That she needed, you know, to do the healing work so she can become conscious and resolve this, whatever feeling she had with the father so she can let him go. And as we went through that and as I worked on her body, and this was done, the back pain completely disappeared.
That's pretty neat. It's pretty interesting. The other thing, you talk a lot about the conscious ego. Is there a difference between conscious ego and unconscious ego?
Well, what I call it more is a wounded ego and a healthy ego.
Okay.
Because consciousness is the one that recognizes the ego. Mm-hmm. So, the wounded ego is the part that the way to heal it is we always use consciousness to heal the wounded ego. But then as the ego gets stronger, it becomes more tricky to see the ego. So to a point where the ego stays alive as long as there's identification mm-hmm. with whatever we're thinking or seeing. Or our thoughts or our emotions. So at the ultimate state, once that identification breaks, is how the illusion of the ego breaks as well. So an ego can really trick us believing that, okay, now I'm conscious, now I'm awake, I understand things. But as long as it's in the realm of understanding, it's still a part of the development of the ego into the healthy state, mm-hmm. because once that veil breaks, I have an analogy in the book with the balloon, when the ego is like a shell of the balloon and the consciousness is the air within it. So as the balloon starts expanding, which is the consciousness, the shell starts expanding, so the ego starts feeling itself bigger and stronger, and to a point where it starts seeing or understanding certain concepts of oneness. And that's where still the ego keeps itself alive, because there's that fear. The ultimate breakthrough through that ego shell would be to face the fear of death, because that's the final identification of the ego, the fear of survival.
Okay. You also talk in your book about the 7 paths, and then it goes into moving through the 7 bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that a little bit to the listeners?
The 7 paths are very much connected to the chakra system in our body. And the whole journey is very, I always like to use the word mathematical, because it is mathematical. Everything in existence is mathematical. So those seven paths and seven bodies are interconnected with the seven chakras in the body. It's not accidental that we come into the body, or our soul comes into the body, in order to transform the consciousness, or that energy that we have, the life force that we have, to transform it into consciousness. And to do that, we need to move through those seven layers of the seven chakras. And each chakra corresponds to a certain level of consciousness. And initially, the first three chakras are necessary in order for us to have the physical life that we're living, to maintain that life, to sustain that life. Those are the first three chakras that they're maintaining the physical reality. And we need to maintain it in order for us to do our spiritual work, so we can grow spiritually. As we start moving higher into the fourth chakra is where suddenly a new world opens up, and that's the world of there's something more than the physical reality. So the consciousness starts recognizing there's something more than what I can touch and I can feel and I can see. Mm-hmm. And so that's the process of then moving higher than that would be coming into your individuality, recognizing that I do have a certain consciousness and a certain gifts. You know, many people who start using their gifts is when we come to the fifth body, and then people start expressing what their truth is, what their gifts are, and they start using it. So you come to that individuality body, which is connected with the fifth chakra, and then it moves higher into the wisdom body, which is connected with the sixth chakra, the third eye center, where there's then connection of understanding. It's not just me, and whatever I'm doing actually is coming from the universe. It's not me. So that thinking that this is my gift starts dropping at that point. Mm-hmm. Because that's the part that still ego is identified as my gift. So it's great, we're using it and we're helping with that gift, but then the ego says, okay, it's my gift. Mm-hmm. And then once we come to the seventh or move through the sixth and recognize that, then the path to the seventh is becomes more like opening to, you know, the statement of let thy will be done. Mm-hmm. So that's where we say, okay, I understand that my will is limited, and I allow myself to be the vehicle for whatever existence wants to do through me. And that's the state where there is a knowing that nothing is personal, nothing is me. I'm not the one who is doing. The doing happens through me. I'm simply a witness of everything that happens, and I allow it with an understanding, because as we develop through those chakras, there's already that development of consciousness creates that deeper understanding of how things work and what is true, what is false, how the duality of life works, how things are always temporary, that we cannot hold on to anything. So life teaches us those things as we continue evolving through those paths to higher levels of vibration.
Mm-hmm. There's another part that was really interesting, and it's the one that you relate to, is the three veils of illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain a little bit on that too?
Yes, the part of the veils is, first we need to work with our personal unconscious, which has to do with our own life story, our own past, sort of our own beliefs, our own projections. So we need to first look at how we generate the story. So that's the veil as we start working. That's the personal growth work that many people are doing, starting to understand and recognize these things. So it's doing the personal work of your own your own belief systems, your own unconscious. That's what you look through, and that's what you start peeling away. And that's where the work of forgiveness comes in, of compassion, understanding, and, you know, all those steps are part of that work. Then there's the collective unconscious, which is the belief systems that are within the collective of humanity. And that's another step. The way we break through that is when we start recognizing that, okay, what I'm doing, my behavior is actually, it follows this collective belief. So then you disidentify from the collective belief that believes in a certain thing. And I don't want to go into too much detail there, but every religious ideology is a collective belief. So that's part of the collective unconscious. Every political ideology is part of the collective unconscious. So, and that's a harder one to break, because there's more feeling of helplessness with this, because, okay, I could do whatever I could do with myself, with my own unconscious, but then I'm faced with things in the society, like we were talking about children and the system, that the system is set up a certain way. And we want to break through that collective system now, bringing something new. And that feels like a humongous work.
I think for most people it is.
It is, yes. So because you have to stand against that humongous collective and say, well, you know what? What you've been doing is now I see this is just a belief system, and it's not right, and it's not good, and it doesn't serve.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to change this. And I think what happened with the U.S. elections, that was such a vivid demonstration of that struggle between the old and the new.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, we need to come to recognize this collective. And the way we can break through it, say, by saying, okay, well, whatever people say against what I know about my inner truth, will not disturb me because I know my truth. Normally, you know how we're influenced by what people think about us.
Mm-hmm.
So breaking through the collective would mean it doesn't matter what other people say. Right. I know myself through my own experience. So that's a place where you say, okay, I'm not going to let anyone's judgments influence me. And I'm going to continue. And then the next level of the veil would be the cosmic veil. And the cosmic veil has to do with everything imprinted in our body based on our lives as animals and trees and rocks. So because energy, it just moves from one physical form to another physical form. It's just a continual movement, and through that movement is how we gain experiences and how we gain more consciousness and how we gain more understanding. So coming to remember our lives as animals and recognizing that the body has within itself those cosmic imprints that are the body itself is part of that cosmic unconsciousness, because it carries the survival instinct within it. And so the breaking through that layer would be to break through that cosmic survival instinct, or the body's survival instinct.
Which do you think, out of those three veils, which do you think is the hardest for the people to break through?
I think it's the personal that requires more work. I would say 80% of the work in terms of you need to meditate, you need to sit down, you need to start looking in and cultivating your inner witness. So 80% of that would be the personal work. Once that's done, the other two are a lot simpler to go through. And the part of going through the cosmic unconscious and the collective unconscious is, as you go deeper into your own unconscious, you start gaining more strength and more fearlessness and more courage. These are absolute ingredients that are necessary to go deeper into the darkness of the unconscious. Without courage, that's what you were saying earlier, that many people feel afraid of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking through the cosmic veil is basically breaking through that veil that prevents us from welcoming the unknown. So for that to happen, for us to gather courage, we need to do the personal work, which prepares us with the understanding that, okay, I can take a risk. This is what happened with me too, where came a moment where I said, okay, I'm ready to die, and because the thirst for truth comes to a certain point where you say, okay, whatever happens, I'm ready to die to know the truth, to know myself, you know, and that's very quick. But the preparation to come to that point, to say today is a good day to die, you know, that's what it takes, 80% of the effort and energy.
Yeah. Let's give them out the name of your book again and where they can get your book from, please.
In Search of the Miraculous Healing into Consciousness. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble online. It's available in bookstores throughout Canada and U.S. and in many metaphysical bookstores, and some of the bookstores that I'll be going to and giving talks would be on my calendar of events on my website.
Okay, can they get it from your website?
Yes, they can. They can also purchase it from my website. And I'd like to mention that the book also comes with a free MP3 download, which is, we're talking about this veil, so it's a guided meditation that I take people through the step of going through that process of death and dying, so that there is a recognition that although the energy is moving through the body in let's put it this way. I've had the experience of how the energy would move when it moves through the dying process.
Mm-hmm.
So the visualization is to bring people to that experience through which there is opening of consciousness. There's steps where some inner healing work can happen as a result as well. So this download is something that people can practice with over and over again, and it could help them disidentify from the thoughts and emotions more and recognize that my inner being, my inner witness is always there, and it never dies, and nothing can happen to it, and there's no story within it. So that comes with the book, with the purchase of the book, and it could be downloaded from my website.
Now, give out your website again, please.
It's madagallian.com, madagallian.com.
Okay. Now, why is, and you went into it just a little bit just now, but why is meditation and visualization practices so important for people?
Meditation and visualization, they're tools to do the inner work. Like anything else, when we go to school, in order to learn to read, we need to start learning about the, you know, the letters and how to make words and sentences. And so meditation is a tool for inner work. Visualization is a good tool to bring us into contact with other realms or higher vibrations, so we don't feel stuck within just this physical reality. The meditation helps to strengthen our inner witness, because it's only through the inner witness that we can disidentify from the story. And that's the difficult part of the work of disidentification. So the stronger the inner witness, the easier it is to disidentify from the story. And once you're disidentified, then you know that you're not the story. And you know that I am eternal. So that's how you find your being, through meditation. And there's many meditation techniques in the book as well, especially active meditations. The Osho active meditations, there are different styles that could fit different styles of practice with people, whatever they prefer. And active meditations are very helpful because they're also, in a way, are like an exercise. So you can incorporate exercise with the meditation because they help to get the energy to move in the body. They get to help to release some of the suppressed thoughts, emotions, release the stress, and prepare you for that silent sitting where you can immediately start experiencing stillness, start experiencing presence. And with that experience is how understanding comes into, okay, now I know what stillness means. I know what presence is. Otherwise, it becomes very difficult. The mind thinks, okay, I need to be still now, and, you know, I need to sit and meditate, but the mind is going so fast that it's hard, and the body's aching here and there. So the active meditations will help to prepare the ground very quickly.
Because one of the things in your book, it explained that very well, because it is true. A lot of people have a very hard time meditating because of the process of getting to the point where they can sit still and mm-hmm. their mind can be still. So the practices that you put in here for the active meditation were really, really quite good. So again, you know, people need to get your book because it does explain a lot of things. It breaks it down real easy for people to read and understand. So, I mean, I was impressed with your book, actually. I thought it was quite good.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I do have another question just before we have to go off. Mm-hmm. Do you think that people come here with some old excess baggage from other lifetimes or other, let's just say, times of, you know, in the past when it was a different lifetime?
Absolutely. Everything is a continuation. Nothing is, nothing stops really. Just because one body is left behind doesn't mean we stop there. The story continues. And the story continues because, it's not possible to transform consciousness just within one lifetime. And every lifetime gives an opportunity to grow more. That's why if we look at people, there's so many different, they're all at different levels of consciousness. Some people are older, we call them older souls. Some people are younger. So the older souls have had more lifetimes experiences. They've been on the planet more than the souls that are coming now. Because what happens within the universe, you know, the Big Bang didn't happen once. Mm-hmm. It continues happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the universe expands. And with each Big Bang, there's a new soul that is born. And I don't mean one, there's, you know, zillions.
Yep.
So, and that soul then needs what we call a primordial bubble, and that's what I was explaining in the book as well. I mm-hmm. explain about this primordial bubble. So those bubbles then float everywhere within the universe, and then they, you know, and nobody knows where they're going, where they're going to go. And the first incarnation into a physical form sort of starts their journey.
Mm-hmm.
Because only through physical form is how we can experience something and become a knower of something. So without experience, it's impossible to be a knower. And that's why we need the physical body. So then this is how the new souls are, you know, incarnating and coming, continually. There's always this movement, and then some of the old souls, once they've learned all the lessons they've learned, then they move on. They don't need another body anymore, and they move on through the universe to wherever they need to be next. And that's how the journey is so exciting. The unknown is so exciting because we're traveling eternally within the universe that continually expands. And we continue to learn and expand consciousness as well. And that's very exciting. That's worth celebrating. Just, you know, knowing that, you know what, we don't need to struggle so much. Let's get going here.
Yeah, let's have some fun.
Yeah.
Let's have some fun. Can you give out the name of your book and your website one more time for the listeners, please?
It's In Search of the Miraculous, Healing into Consciousness. And it comes with a free MP3 download, as I said. The website is madadalian.com. That's madadalian.com. And, and to everything, you know, there's lots of information on the website, so, and people are welcome to write and ask questions. Yeah, and there's many methods. The active meditation methods are also in the website, so with some photos and descriptions. And so I'm sure, you know, it's worth exploring because there might be something useful and interesting. I forgot to mention too that there's many video clips as well where I do some demonstrations of some elements of my method. Of course, the interview we're having together will go up there, too.
Great. No, that's a good thing. I have one other question to ask you because we have just a little bit more time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's up to you if you'd like to answer or not. But everybody's so tangled up with 2012 coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an opinion about 2012?
Well, my opinion about 2012 is that we have an opportunity to start something brand new. And my sense is, as you know, the Mayan calendar sort of ends there.
Mm-hmm.
And in my sense, the reason it ends there, because now, as humanity, we're given that permission, or we're given that gift of from existence that says, okay, you have come to a certain level of development that we're going to let you now create the new world the way you want it. So, in other words, it's your responsibility. Because we are the creators. You know, it's not like somebody is playing God out there.
Mm-hmm.
We are the God that's creating the next phase.
Yeah.
So we need to find that we need to recognize that and say we have the power, we have the creativity, we have the vision, and we need to start dreaming that new world. And as a matter of fact, I'm starting a new project which is called To Dream a New World. And this would involve children as well as adults. And
good.
Maybe some other time we could talk about that once I'm more ready.
No, I think we're going to have you on again because we didn't cover half the things that really need to be covered to help people out that are listening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I do suggest that they get your book. It, like I said, I read it. It's a very good book. It does explain things really easily so people can understand it. The exercises that you give in there are quite good. The quotes that you've made in there. And at the end of each chapter, one of the things that you have that a lot of people don't is you have kind of like a question-answer session, which also helps people to understand maybe what they may be feeling, but, you know, don't know how to ask it.
Yes.
So that was also very, very interesting. Well, our time is up. I'd like to thank you for being on the show. It was great.
Yeah, thank you very much, Nancy.
And like I said, we'll talk because I got, you know, some things we need to talk about when it comes to kids and my getting my school going and then you coming in there and helping out. How's that?
Yes, please, absolutely. I'd like to.
You're very welcome. Anyway, it was great having you on it, and I thank you very much for taking the time for the show.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you very much, too. Yeah, it was great talking to you.
Good. You have a great week. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. And really, check out her book, In Search of the Miraculous, Healing into Consciousness. It's great. May God bless all of you. Have a great week. Take care, and bye now.